Terrific. So my presentation today is going to be about something called the Minimum Initial Service Package of Reproductive Health. And I have to say it's a bit dated. It's about assessment work that we did in 2005 and 2006 in Darfur. But I think that some of the policy issues are still very, very relevant, particularly to health and human rights. So then, enter. Yes. Okay, disclosure statement. So the Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Refugee Commission adopts the International Conference on Population and Development's definition of reproductive health, which, like, very holistic, a state of complete mental, physical, and social well-being, not just the absence of disease or illness. It also implies that people are able to have a satisfying and safe sex life, and that they have the freedom and the capacity to decide when, if, and how often to have children. Now, there's four major components that come under reproductive health, typically and within this definition: maternal and newborn health, family planning, sexually transmitted infections, including HIV/AIDS, and gender-based violence. So the minimum initial service package is a set of priority reproductive health services that was designed for the onset of emergencies when there are competing priorities, not only in the health sector, but in other sectors. Because there's so much to do in comprehensive reproductive health, that these activities were selected because of their impact on morbidity and mortality. And there's basically five objectives to the MIS. Three of them are technical, but two are broader issues. One is ensuring that the health sector or cluster identifies a lead agency to coordinate around the MIS, and this is particularly important because in emergencies, the health sector is often very focused on infectious diseases, and if there isn't a lead agency with a person in that agency doing some coordination around reproductive health among community-based organizations and international organizations and ministries of health where relevant, it just kind of falls through the loop. So that's one broad area. Then a second objective is preventing sexual violence and providing care for survivors. You'll notice that it's very focused on sexual violence and not gender-based violence broadly. Reducing HIV transmission, preventing excess maternal and newborn morbidity and mortality, and then planning for comprehensive reproductive health services as the situation stabilizes. So the MIS was first established back in 1996, an interagency field manual. The guidance is now integrated within the minimum standards and disaster response for SPHERE, the health cluster guide, and was even recognized in the Granada consensus as something that should not only be available, but it should be equitably scaled up to all of the population before comprehensive services are integrated. So just a little bit of background to this. In 2004 and 5, when the crisis in Darfur was happening, the Women's Refugee Commission, through other assessments, one in Chad, recognized that international humanitarian actors really didn't even know what the MISP was. So we subgranted to three international NGOs in three states of Darfur to fund them to implement the MIS so we could, you know, pilot these projects and obtain some learning around it. So that was actually the typo here. It was North, West, and South Darfur. And just basically a little bit of background to the crisis there. In 2003, fighting escalated when the Sudanese government-backed militia intensified fighting with the rebel groups in Darfur and displacing and carrying out a scorched earth tactic campaign, is what they've referred to it as, of rape and pillage and ethnic cleansing. It's pretty extensive. Displacing about 1 million people at the time, but now I think up to 2 million have been displaced in that conflict, 1.9, I think. So I'm going back now. I'm going to go over each of the objectives in the MIS and just talk a little bit about what happened. There are two objectives that I really want to focus on here in terms of health policies and human rights issues. And so I'll get to those, but I want to go through all of them just briefly. So as I mentioned, it's really important for the health sector to identify a lead agency, for that lead agency to host coordinating meetings to facilitate implementation of the MISP, that reproductive health working group needs to be within the health sector and feeding back to the health sector, if nothing else, to get the support of the health sector on obstacles like some of the barriers that were faced in Darfur. And then, of course, sharing information about what's happening in terms of equipment and supplies. So what we found, basically, that there were efforts to coordinate action on reproductive health in all three states of Darfur, not a good connection to the health sector or system. And typically, in our MISP assessments, we find that people are, I mean, it's changing now since our last assessment in Haiti, but people are pretty much focusing on everything but the MISP. Which is unfortunate. And then the coordination is always a challenge in humanitarian settings, I guess. People tend to lack coordination skills. Some of the meetings were set for like 4 hours long in the middle of the crisis without and a lot of time was spent on information sharing instead of problem solving. Preventing and managing the consequences of sexual violence. So that means putting in place measures to protect women and girls from sexual violence means measures so that they can access their basic and their survival needs without being assaulted. Making clinical care, the response is making clinical care available for survivors of rape, which, I mean, part of the minimum standard of care is emergency contraception, care for STIs, and post-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, but also psychosocial support, referral where that's available. And then, most importantly, informing the community of the benefits of seeking that care, otherwise women and girls will not come forward and will not access it. So in terms of prevention in Darfur, I think the humanitarian community was up against a lot of security challenges, and this was, by and large, pretty much a failure, but it was especially acute when it comes to the issue of cooking fuel, because in these emergencies, shelter is provided, water is provided, food that actually has to be cooked is provided, but the fuel to cook it is not. And these populations are displaced into hostile territory, so when women and girls would have to go out to collect firewood, you know, they would be exposed to rape, sexual assault. And, you know, the longer the crisis went on, the farther they had to go, and it was, you know, the environment there was so bad that they go for miles and miles and have to dig up roots out of the desert. But this is an issue the humanitarian community is increasingly taking on. And they did try to do things there. They tried to put in firewood patrols and also fuel-efficient stoves with hopes of cutting down the amount of, you know, wood that was needed. In terms of the response as well, for psychosocial support, there were women's health centers, the first time I'd seen this, where women could come and just have a safe space, and then survivors could also access that. In terms of care for survivors, I mean, I'd say that the first couple years in the Darfur crisis with all those rapes, there are very, very few agencies. The only one we came across that was providing care for survivors was Medecins Sans Frontières. And eventually, in late 2005, 2006, when I think humanitarian organizations realized that, sexual violence, rape was just not going away, it was continuing, they had to do something. Even though these guidelines had been there, they weren't well prepared to provide clinical services. So when they decided to, they realized that the government had a procedure, because the rape is a crime, that a Form 8 had to be completed by the police, and then that form was given to the healthcare provider that allowed the provider to provide the care. So that was obviously a big barrier to care, and eventually there was an effort to successfully rescind it, but the problem was that it took a long time then to convince providers or train providers of the change, train lawyers, train judges, train the police, and then, of course, to let women themselves know that they could access this care without going to the police. however, so there were delays, and even after it was rescinded, because all that had to be done. But one international NGO, I think later in 2006 in the north, did make some major efforts to try to provide care to survivors and ensure they got it. they worked with the African Union. They trained them on sexual violence, and they had created flyers and translated them into Arabic. And then when the African Union went out after a major assault of some kind, they would distribute these flyers in the community. So the African Union would go out to see what the casualties were. And just to say, too, that a lot of the resistance by international NGOs to providing this care was because of the government's policies, and they were a little bit afraid of it. And when MSF published a report on the care they provided, the international NGOs said, see, look what happens, because their country director ended up getting jailed. So it wasn't really the care they provided, because they provided care to hundreds of women, but it was because they published the report. The third objective is reducing HIV transmission through ensuring that blood is safe for transfusion, facilitating and enforcing respect for universal standards, and making condoms free and available. So this was problematic as well. Safe blood transfusion was not available in South Darfur even by 2006. ICRC was providing it, but only for the war wounded. I guess that did not include rape survivors. and then in the north, only 8 of the 10 facilities that were providing blood were actually screening it. Condoms were also not available. Objective 4, preventing excess newborn and maternal morbidity and mortality. This is the second area that was really problematic. This is ensuring that women and girls have access to emergency, basic and comprehensive emergency obstetric care. and of course, establishing and ensuring that there's a referral system so that they have it, they have access to it. And then another objective is to provide clean delivery kits to visibly pregnant women, because many of them, you know, wouldn't be delivering at a health facility to begin with. So the easiest things in these emergencies are usually done quite readily. There was the distribution of clean delivery kits, production of them by CBOs, but access to emergency obstetric care was somewhat like the clinical care for survivors of sexual violence. I guess because it's clinical and it's difficult and it's, you know, usually not in good shape even before a crisis. But international NGOs doing health services in the camps weren't providing that at the referral level during the emergency. So women would come in from the community and go to a referral facility. But because of the policy of the government, basic emergency obstetric care couldn't be provided at a peripheral level. It had to be provided only at the referral hospital. So that was one issue. The government had this policy of, you know, the emergency obstetric care, even basic, having to be provided at the referral hospital. The other issue was that if a woman was pregnant out of wedlock, that's also a crime. So again, a Form 8 had to be completed in order for providers, Sudanese providers, to provide that care. Obviously, serious, serious delays in accessing the care. So some women, you know, would go to come from the community into the referral facility, even go to at the hospital level, and even if she was hemorrhaging, she didn't have a form, she would die. And I did meet with a WHO representative when I was there, and he said that he'd see like somewhere between 17 to 23 young girls or women a week, 12 of them, suffering from complications of unsafe abortions. And many of them died, 2 or 3 a week, he said. And the fifth objective is planning for comprehensive reproductive health care. So integrating more, you know, site planning, using of data, ensuring adequate equipment and supplies. I think most of the NGOs were more prepared to do that than to provide the minimum package. And I just want to say that the MIST has been revised since 2004 and 5 to include a few other additional priorities. One is ensuring that contraceptives are available to meet demand. Another is ensuring syndromic treatment of people who present with symptoms of STIs. And of course, ensuring antiretrovirals are available to people who are on them to continue use, and making sure hygiene materials are available. Other barriers here, when we look at this though, were that family planning was a challenge because in Darfur only physicians were allowed to provide anything beyond pills. So physicians had to do Depo-Provera injections, for example, and even it had to be OBGYN doctors who could put in intrauterine devices. So in conclusion then, there are policy barriers such as these legal requirements and provider restrictions that if people are centered on ensuring the MIS is in place from the onset of emergency, would identify first what are the policy implications for implementing the MIS, and then what are the immediate action steps we can do to take remedial action. And then always, it doesn't make sense to set up the services if there isn't some information and education to communities about benefits for seeking care if a girl has been raped and where to go to access that care in the new setting, and the same with emergency obstetric complications. Thank you.